Okay, April 7th, 2015. And the last time, which was 3 weeks ago, I guess I was winding up my tenure at the State Health Department. And the time period was roughly 1975. I had finally come to the end of the line with the health department and indeed with the whole world of bureaucracies of any type, since I had struck out in the labor movement and in the university and the State Department. And so I wasn't going to try to continue on that path. But on the other hand, I had to do something because, among other things, I was having to pay child support to 5 children at the time, not to mention my own expenses. Well, maybe I have mentioned this before, but I'll say it again. I was inspired by the example of my mother, who had figured out a way for herself to keep body and soul together with a certain niche in the world of real estate. And she had found that there were lots of modest houses becoming available as the result of the tremendous building of tracts around the main cities, which were filled up with returning GIs who were able to buy these houses with nothing down.
You covered this already.
Well, so she would buy these houses again with practically nothing down. She would assume the loans and they were at 2% interest or something like that. And so she was able to rent them out at a very modest rental. And that would be enough not only to cover the expenses, but to give her a little something extra. Well, I never did follow that pattern exactly. But in one way or another, I tried to see what I could do in that new world in which I would be essentially self-employed and wouldn't have to answer to a bureaucracy of any kind. In the first instance, I needed to get a real estate license. So I studied for that and found it was very easy to pass. And then I had to look for a place to hang my license. That is to say, I had to find a broker who would take me on as a salesperson. And I found a fellow whose office was on University Avenue, a little bit south of Shattuck. It was called the University Realty. And the broker's name was Victor Goff, and he was a good liberal, and I don't remember exactly how I teamed up with him, but the only requirement was that I would have to stay on the floor, as they call it, one day a week, meaning that I would take care of everybody who walked in, no matter what their needs were. And if it were just a matter of information, I was supposed to be able to answer their questions. And if they actually wanted to look at real estate to buy, then they became my clients, and I would be entitled to a commission if, in fact, it ever came to the point of their buying something. Well, there was another guy who was there also, and he and I became quite good friends. He was more experienced than I in the field, but he was having a rather difficult time making a go of it. Because he was an African American, and labored under sort of a fear of being rejected, where I kept arguing with him that he was in the world's center of liberal guilt, and that he, if he went door to door, cold soliciting, he would probably find a better reception in Berkeley than any place else in the world. But he still was rather afraid of being rejected. So he and I talked. We spent a lot of time talking. And later on, he had a suggestion for me that helped me make a sale. Well, I'll never forget my first sale in the world of real estate was a duplex in West Berkeley, which was selling for $15,000. And there was an offer, and that meant that I, representing the buyer, would enter into negotiations with an agent who was representing the seller. And he was also rather new in the field, and so we didn't take the whole thing terribly seriously, because under the rules of the game, we were talking about a commission of 6% of $15,000, which was going to be split four ways. The listing office got 50% of the 6%. The office of the buyer got the other 50%. The broker of each of those two offices got 50% of 50%, and what was left would be for us salespeople. And I think we ended up with $150 a piece or something like that. And it became very clear to me that I was not ever going to be making a killing at selling real estate to people who came in off the street. I began looking for ways in which it was possible to buy real estate on my own account. And And I somehow stumbled into one such type of purchase, which is brand new in my experience, but I thought it sounded as though it had possibilities. And that was what they call estate sales, in which a person who has deceased as an executor who has to dispose of the property left by the deceased, and if it's real estate, there were certain rules of the game. They had to enter into an auction in which this property was advertised, and anyone who was interested would have to congregate on the steps of the county courthouse and be prepared to pay all cash to back up their offer. Well, there was a friend of the woman that I was associated with at that time. Her name was Lois. I'm sure you both remember her. She had a good friend who had heard about an estate sale that sounded very intriguing. And I looked at it and I agreed that it was. And it was a 5-bedroom, 3-bath, brown shingle house on the corner of Prospect and Dwight Way, very close to the campus, and it looked to me as though it was in pretty good condition. And so I tried to scrape up enough money to enter a credible bid in this auction process, meaning I had to borrow from relatives and friends, but I did win the bid, and that opened up a whole new world for me. It did require some work. And I tried to do as much of the work as I could, given my lack of skills. But I learned by doing a number of things. I would buy books about plumbing and wiring and shingling and glazing and painting and whatever. I remember Eugene helped me put that place into shape by laying some carpets.
I remember that.
Well, good for you. I think we did a pretty good job. So, this was a variation of my mother's strategy. I wasn't buying it up to sell it right away. I planned to rent it for a while. Not that I had the idea that the real estate market was going to go up particularly fast, because in fact at that time it wasn't. This was a time in which the Berkeley real estate market was really quite reasonable. I remember my broker, Victor Goff, announced to us salespeople that Berkeley was about to witness the first $100,000 sale of a single family house. We all drove by to look at it. It was kind of a castle up in the Berkeley Hills for $100,000. So I got this this 5-bedroom, 3-bath brown shingle in a good location for $40,000. And didn't have any trouble renting it, and held on to it for several years. That was just one example. I went into different aspects of real estate and learned some of the nuances and tricks of the trade and things to do and not to do. And I entered into some cases of rental properties with more than one unit. There was one on California Street, I remember, had 4 units. And it was pretty good condition. Once again, there were always things to do to make it better. And I gradually became a little more proficient at some handyman stuff. I had help from a friend of mine from the health department who had been in the maintenance department of that institution, and he knew how to do almost everything that needed to be done, and he would help me from time to time. I'm trying to think of some other different types of real estate that I became involved in. Well, I had one 5-unit place on Alcatraz on the corner of Shattuck. I guess it was different from the others in that it was located in Oakland rather than Berkeley. So it was really a bargain. But it wasn't all a bed of roses. I would be called at all hours with a woman who claimed that her kitchen sink didn't work. And so I went there after dark, took off the P-trap, and found that her children had stuffed knives and forks and spoons down into the drain. So I fixed that. And I was called at night with a problem on that beautiful brown shingle at the corner of Prospect and Dwight because one of the children had put a toothbrush down the toilet, and that stopped it up pretty well. So I did not ever seriously consider having a company provide management of these places. I didn't think that I was a big enough operator to do that. And besides, I was too cheap to pay their commission. So I kept trying to keep track of everything. At one time, I guess I had 15 units of one type or another scattered around the town. But I just hated living in fear of what every time the phone rang, I might be called upon to do. So,
where were you living during this period? That.
Let me think.
Was this after Virginia Street?
I was still living in Virginia Street. Okay, now it's all starting to come back to me. Lois and I were living in Virginia Street, but it wasn't big enough. Because there were times when the children visited, and there just wasn't room enough. They would had only two bedrooms, for heaven's sake. So the kids usually slept on the floor in sleeping bags. So we started house hunting, and this time not looking for something to develop and rent, but to live in ourselves. And late one afternoon, when all the other open houses had closed, we drove by one on Scenic Avenue where the salesperson was just taking down his sign, and wasn't any too happy about our asking to go through the place, but he finally agreed. It seems that he was under considerable pressure from the owner to get some action, because she, a widow of a professor at the university, who incidentally was the founder of what became known as hydroponics, and he had developed the whole property to grow things in that manner. This was almost a half acre of land right in the middle of that very desirable area. And a nice big stucco house, which you probably remember. 1555 Scenic Avenue. $42,000, and that one I didn't have to pay all cash. Got a conventional loan. But one of the lessons that I learned on that occasion, and it came in handy at a number of other occasions, including buying this house, that there were times when a seller needed badly to sell. And it's not as though you were taking advantage of them if you got a good deal. You were actually doing them a favor because, well, in the case of the widow who owned the place on Scenic, she had been assured that the place would sell quickly and that she could afford to find something else and to move out. And so she had, and it seems that she had had a couple of offers that had fallen through because they couldn't qualify for a loan or whatever the reason was. And so she was really, really, really anxious to sell for almost any reasonable offer. So it needed some work, but nothing really. Well, the kitchen needed to be updated, but it was a heck of a deal. So another lesson I learned from that occasion was that one shouldn't be stampeded by emotions. I was stampeded into selling that place when I didn't really have to, because of the political situation in Berkeley. This was in the middle of the Vietnam War. War of sorts that went on within the city of Berkeley itself, in which there was a kind of test of approaches. Hello? There were basically two approaches to protesting the war in Vietnam. And one was by reason, and the other was by mindless violence. And so there were episodes of mobs cruising down the main street and smashing windows right and left without any reason. And in fact, this school was able to elect 3 members of the city council. And I couldn't see where it all might end. It would, it could conceivably end with the Place Unscenic being trashed. And so I myself acted out of sheer emotion and fear, and in order to get a quick sale, I decided I would sell it myself, and that way I could that way I could save a commission. So I practically gave it away. So that was another lesson learned the hard way. Because as time went by, Berkeley citizens kicked out these three loonies in a recall election, and things settled down to a more appropriate forms of protest. I got another very nice house on Colton Boulevard in Montclair, which you may also possibly recall. But if I had held on to the one in Scenic, it would have been very wise. However, values did go up, and I developed an approach to selling places to the tenants who were renting there if they really loved the place. Because I, once again, acting somewhat emotionally, felt that they would take good care of it, and that it would be, that I would be appreciated, and at the same time, I could make it easy for them to afford it, because I was willing to hold back a second mortgage so that if they were in a graduate program at the university or something like that, they wouldn't have to qualify for a commercial loan where they might have difficulty. So I, in a number of cases, including the one on Prospect, I remember letting a tenant named Bob McAllister, who was a machinist by trade, a very nice guy, and he really loved that house, and he was sufficiently skilled at a lot of different trades that he could make it even better than I had. So I let him have it at a very good price, and yet by this time, and this was a couple, 3 years later, it had already gone up from $42,000 to over $100,000. I did the same thing with the fourplex on California Street. Let one of the tenants there buy it. And I did the same thing on one, a single family home on Alston Way. I preferred to deal with people that I knew rather than putting these places on the open market and having to entertain negotiations with a number of perfect strangers. And sometimes it didn't work out as I had hoped, but it usually did. And that entered that. And put a certain human quality into the whole practice, which I felt was usually lacking. I began getting some radical ideas about the whole real estate industry, in which I thought that these escalating prices were very unhealthy because they were far outstripping anything that was going on in the larger economy. I began thinking it would be a balloon being inflated to the point where it was bound to burst. And I began thinking that it was the profession, if you want to call it a profession, the industry of real estate sales that was responsible to a considerable extent about these rapid increases, because sellers didn't usually have any idea what to list their places for, and so they would take the advice of a broker, and the broker had a vested interest in pegging the listing at the highest possible level, even though it might seem beyond the norm. And the brokers would always argue that they were just letting the market set its own level. And that, in fact, they had an ethical obligation to get the highest possible price that they could on behalf of their client, etc., etc., etc. Well, I didn't like the idea. So I started getting out, and I thought that the market had certainly reached its high point in the late 70s or early 80s, something like that. So I started divesting myself. Meaning that I needed to find something else to put the money into. But I did keep a few places. And I would put the money into enough to not only meet my living expenses, but also to put away something for the future. Because I was still too young to qualify for a pension from the state. Much less to qualify for Social Security. So I looked into the whole field of secondary financing, as they call it. When a person buys a house with a conventional loan of 80% or whatever, and they don't have the remaining 20% down payment, they frequently take out a second deed of trust. For a shorter term than the 30-year first mortgage. And the terms of the second trust deed would call for a substantially higher rate of interest. So when I would sell a house on terms that did provide me with some money to invest, I would look into second deeds And for a while, I guess I had good luck. But then, I don't know what got into me. Oh, I do know what got into me. There was a period in the late 1970s in which the whole world economy was shaken up by events in the Middle East, in which the producers of oil began to take advantage of a near monopoly position. And started jacking up the price of oil. And then there was something, I can't recall exactly why, but they cut off the spigot entirely for a period. And there was a gasoline shortage in this country, with people lined up for blocks to buy gasoline at their favorite corner station. And that resulted in severe inflation, it resulted in very high rates of interest, it was the period in which the Shah of Iran was overthrown. And the mullahs took over running the country. Which in turn resulted in the election of Ronald Reagan over Jimmy Carter. And so I, in order to keep, the inflation was about 15%, as I recall. And in order to keep up with the cost of living, I began taking chances in the second deed of trust market. And investing in places that I would not have in, under normal circumstances, such as a guy in Las Vegas, Nevada, who I thought would be on the up and up. Because he was on the faculty of the University of Nevada at Las Vegas, UNLV. Well, it turned out that he was a professor, if that's the word, in the physical education department. And the physical education department was best known for the fact that their basketball coach was a guy named Jerry Tarkanian, who was in constant hot water with the authorities who were trying to maintain the amateur status of college athletics. Jerry Tarkanian was waging a war against them, and they against him. And he usually won. Well, to make a long story short, the guy who was selling these deeds of trust was a teacher, if that's the word, who was running courses set up exclusively for athletes, including things like playing billiards. That was one of their courses. Learning how to pack a backpack for an overnight hike. That was another one of their courses. And he was actually spending his time peddling these deeds of trust, all of which went bad, and he was a crook, and he was running a Ponzi scheme. And nothing was ever done about him, because as far as I could tell, the entire city of Las Vegas was occupied by crooks. So I made a lot of mistakes in my efforts to build up a nest egg because I didn't have any protection against the possibilities of some kind of health problem in my older years, which would not be covered by Medicare, and I had never forgotten the stories that my mother told me about her sister, my Aunt Zella, who had been married to a rancher in Texas, who was quite successful. And had left my aunt with a quite large inheritance. So she was able to buy or build, have a very nice brick house built for herself in Sweetwater, Texas. And then began developing abdominal cancer. And it ate up her insides, and it ate up her inheritance. And at the end, she was dependent upon help from her children. And it was really a sad, sad story. And I guess I wanted to protect myself against that. by building up enough to cover medical problems and nursing home care or whatever might be required. I never did go into the stock market. I never understood it. The few times that I tried following somebody's hot tip, it always went bad. And even if one bought things that were supposedly as solid as the Rock of Gibraltar, IBM, for example, or Standard Oil, or whatever you might wish, nothing was immune, apparently, from up and down cycles. And I was not willing to become one of the people that I saw tied, after a manner of speaking, to the ticker tapes from Wall Street, just to see what happened to their stocks on a day-to-day basis. And there were more things that I wanted to do with my life than that. My biggest regret, I guess, is that none of this business of working on old houses and whatever I was doing in real estate . None of it had anything whatever to do by way of follow-up to what I had been doing in the farm labor movement, in the environmental movement, in the field of pesticide regulation. I frequently thought of doing a monograph on the history of AWOC, because everybody knew about the story of Cesar Chavez, but almost nobody knew about AWOC, which had come before him and had in some ways made it possible for him. Also, it bothered me a lot that during this intellectual dark ages in my own life, nobody had any recollection about the Bracero program, which I still felt was of extraordinary historical importance and interest. And yet I never worked it in to this period of making a living by real estate. If I had been of a different nature, I would have done what some of my more knowledgeable and experienced friends were doing, and that was writing applications for financial assistance from foundations, from the National Endowment for the Humanities, from comparable organizations such as that at the state level. A very good friend of mine from the farm labor days did that throughout all of these years, and she was able to get grants, not only for herself, but people would come to her and she would help them write up their own applications, and she was very successful at it. So I might have done that, and I might have gone on to write the true story of AWOC, and I might have done something with the magnum opus that I wrote about the Bracero program. Which never saw the light of day. But one thing did result from the real estate period, and that is that even though Virginia and I were never able to buy long-term care insurance, we had to trust that by the luck of the draw, we wouldn't have to spend too much time in nursing homes or whatever. And when the time comes that we do, we will have enough in the piggy bank to take care of it. But every once in a while, I think about returning to the good old days in which I was making myself useful. In the world, in the way of helping with social problems. And in fact, there were times when I was able to be of some help, even during my declining years. And perhaps we can talk about that next time. Okay.
Is that good?
Yep.
Okay.